listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 241 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me on the other side of the country again is Chris Robley. We were just talking about how we had to figure out how to record being away from each other now.
I know. I've gotten out of the habit of setting up my lonely mic in my lonely little room all by myself. But hello from across the continent.
Yeah, we've had so many live podcasts, or you were here in Portland, and then we've been rolling out some of the content from the conference. So we haven't done this over the internet like normal in a while. So hopefully it goes well.
Yeah, you know, I was remembering a friend of mine sent me a link to that song I mentioned a few episodes ago. What's it called? The Out by the Lake or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
The Parked by the... And I was remembering we laughed about that when we were in Oregon together.
Yes.
I hope everyone has listened to that song now that I've completely forgotten what it's called.
Maybe if we all get together and work hard enough, we can get the song to chart.
Out by the Lake? Is that what it's called?
I don't know. You never told me the title.
Well, you'll have to leave a link in the show notes then.
All right. Well, you'll have to send me the link because I don't know where it's at.
Okay.
Anyway, in today's episode, we are going to be talking about building a story into your marketing plan. And, you know, we've talked a lot about on the podcast about what your story is as an artist. But really, I think there's a different step. It kind of coincides with knowing your story. But it's also just trying to figure out how to make the different promotions and marketing techniques and things that we need to say to get people to take action. How to get it to sound more interesting than just... go do this. Go listen to my music. New song out now. So we are going to be talking about that today, and I think it's going to be a good discussion.
I'm excited. We'll do a little soul searching, probably beat ourselves up a bit, which is always fun for listeners, I think.
It's just another episode of the DIY Musician Podcast. We'll laugh, we'll cry,
yeah.
We'll finish off with a warm embrace, and we'll go on with our lives. Live another day.
Indeed.
So it's been an exciting time. We've Small Town Poets, we just released another single, which I'll be talking about later with the marketing that we did around that. And so new music rolling, which is always nice. And I know, Chris, you've had a campaign that you've been working on.
I'm in the midst of a massive marketing/album release campaign, which I will be talking about.
Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent.
It's fun to release new music, isn't it? You feel like you go through those dormant phases and you're like, you start wondering like what your life's all about. What the hell have you been doing with your time? And then suddenly a song gets finished and you're like, oh, good. Purpose.
And then a day later, you go back to wondering.
Right. Now that's up. What do I do?
Actually, this release that we just did with Small Town Poets was the first release I have done since the release radar, since your songs get pushed to all your fans on their release radar. That adjustment Spotify made like a couple months after our last release. So uh-huh. That was interesting to see, and some differences. And, you know, clearly more of our fans are starting to adopt streaming, but we still have quite a few fans that are on iTunes getting downloads, and we have quite a few fans that use Amazon, which is good to see. I think Amazon's going to be one of the ones to watch in the coming years. I know they've got some cool things they're working on, but every time I release music, it's just interesting to see how things are shifting and where people are at, especially, you know, like I've talked about many times on the podcast, our fan base, our original core fan base from back in the day is older, and seeing how they react compared to people that find us that are younger. So,
yeah, well, not only is, are there rapid changes in how people are consuming music, but I also feel like there's some pretty significant changes in what it takes to even get someone to care. Or maybe not to care, but to take the action you need them to take, which I imagine we'll be talking about in our discussion. But I've found that interesting too, is just even a way of kind of getting someone's attention and impressing them and creating some sense of urgency that they should do something with your music is different these days than it was even like 2 years ago.
Agreed. And it gets confusing and challenging, and some things that you think will work don't. And then things that you thought, that's not going to do much, sometimes those work. And yes, so we're going to be talking about some of that today as we discuss building a story into your marketing plan and really just how to take, make better use of that time where you're releasing music and make sure that it goes as far as it can and so forth. But before we get to that, I just want to remind you that for the best in music distribution, monetization, and promotion tools, head on over to cdbaby.com. That's what you should do. Sign up there. You can go get a CD Baby account, even if if you're slumming it with another distributor. You can go get a CD Baby account and get access to our marketing tools through show.co. And we're going to be talking about some of that today, because I think our Spotify pre-save is far superior to the other ones out there, because it actually allows you to incentivize people in order to take action. And that's a key thing. So head on over to cdbaby.com. Check all that out. You can do that while you're listening to the podcast. Unless you're driving, don't do it while you're driving.
Do we have any news items today? Because I would like to throw two in that follow kind of as a plug for CD Baby, but also that they're worth knowing.
Oh.
So is there any news today?
Apparently you've got news.
All right.
You've got news.
The first is, and I don't think we've mentioned this in previous episodes. If we have, I apologize. But Amazon has launched Amazon Music HD, which is high def CD quality streaming. And if your music is distributed through CD Baby, it's already at Amazon in that FLAC quality, lossless quality audio. So all those audiophiles, you want to pay just a little bit more per month for Amazon Music's best sounding stuff, can do that. And then the other one is that CD Baby is partnered with a company called Tencent in China. And Tencent provides music to three of the biggest streaming platforms in China. So again, if your music is distributed through us, it's going to be basically available to, I think, what is about 75% of all of the streaming users in China, which is, hundreds of millions of people. So your music is global. And for both of those things, we don't charge you anything extra. It's just all included. We want to send your music where it needs to be.
Yeah, and China is going to be interesting to watch, because it's really just opening up to streaming. And a lot of Asia is really brand new to streaming and what's happening there. And so it's going to be interesting to see what the consumption of music is like. And I know a lot of people might be thinking, well, all my fans are not in China. Well, that could change. And not necessarily that your fans are all going to be in China now, but when there's a billion people that are now starting to stream music, it's probably a good idea to have your music there too.
Yeah. And I mean, from my perspective with my own music, China is completely new ground. I'm not familiar with how my music or if it would be received there, but I noticed, because I'm not someone who tours like very often, I'm just as likely to have someone listening to my music on Spotify who's in Mexico City or Poland, or, I'm not sure, but, places in Europe or whatever, but like, as I am to have someone who lives down the street from me in Maine or in Portland, Oregon, or wherever. I've kind of have a little bit more of a following, I guess, or connections. So it's really interesting to me that already in the places Spotify reaches, my music is completely global. And this is just another facet of that. Different platforms, of course, but completely new territories. And really, it's the biggest music market in the world. I mean, there's a billion people there, and lots of them jumped straight into streaming. They didn't have to be conditioned out of other mediums. So,
yeah. What was your hesitation with Poland?
No. It's nothing against Poland, except I wasn't actually sure if Spotify is available in Poland. It was only my own ignorance that made me second guess that one.
Oh, okay. Just making sure. Yes. Yes. Global. It's a global world. You got to start thinking globally with your music and understand where your music is. That doesn't mean that you need to go check in all these platforms every day. And more and more of them are starting to release artist portals where you can access some tools. That doesn't mean you need to, you know, hit all of those every day, but it's a good idea to know where your music is. And as sales and streams come in to your account at CD Baby, that you note where they're coming from, because that's important. All right. Building a story into your marketing plan. So really, what got me thinking about this is every time we start releasing music, and by we, I mean Small Town Poets, it's this thing of like, oh, how do we make this sound interesting? How do we get people to take action? Just like you were saying at the top, Chris, like every time it's like trying to figure out what's going to work to get people to care, what's going to work to get them excited, and even more so, what might work to get them to actually share this beyond just them listening to it themselves or do something that helps promote us further. As artists, we get in a rut. And I've mentioned many times in talks and even on this podcast where I've done searches on Twitter and I see a lot of horrible calls to action, I will say, where people are just like, listen to my music, buy my song, go here, do this. And there's nothing that's interesting or engaging. Now, I will say at the top here that there are times where we just need to be direct like that. The new song is available and it is right here. There's nothing wrong with that. But that in and of itself is not interesting or engaging outside of your diehard fans that are just waiting and waiting for that new song. That message doesn't mean anything.
If I can just weigh in for a second, it's amazing to me that I am guilty of this almost every time I put out music, that I default or fall back into defaulting to, I guess that's what you do when you default, you fall back into something, into thinking that just because I'm excited or scared or whatever to put out new music and it feels big to me because this is my life and my music, I assume that anyone gives a damn. That's my first position. And I talk about marketing for work. We do marketing for CD Baby. We do various degrees of marketing for our own music. Like, this is what we think about. And for me, I still always am like, oh, well, clearly I can just say like, hey, my new song's coming out. Pre-save it. That's cool. Like, everyone will do it, right? And then I have to, kind of catch myself and be like, no, slow down. No one really cares about you as much as you do, Chris. You're a narcissist. You need to find a way to make this more exciting and interesting.
I care, Chris. I
yes.
care.
Yes. Thank you. But it's funny, I'm not immune to this. I think we all think our newest thing is news.
Well, you know, it's funny because the last Small Town Poets album we did, I think is the last full-length album we did, not the song that we just released. But when we released that last full-length album in 2018, I thought, this is our best work yet. And I still think that. The musicianship on it and the sounds and the songs, I think, is our best work. And I walked away going, if only people would hear it, it'd be huge. And then I was at a friend's album release show and he almost said those exact same words back to me, like, if only everyone could hear it, this will be huge. And I'm like, oh boy,
oh,
we all say
everyone.
That.
Right.
We all say that. But full disclosure, with this latest song that we did for Small Town Poets, out of the new music we're working on, I hope I don't offend anyone in the band when I say this, out of the new music we've been working on, the new songs, it was the song I was least excited about. I think it turned out great. I think it's a great song and it turned out great. But it was the one that I'm like, okay, we'll start with that one later. Let's do these because I'm really excited about those. So I feel like when we released it, my perception of, you know, I don't know, my approach to marketing, I think my brain was in a different spot, maybe in a little more clear,
more
thinking
realistic.
Yeah. I don't know. So anyway, I really started to approach it from a marketing problem, not going, oh, the song's going to speak for itself. Even though, again, I think it's a great song. I'm really pleased with how it turned out. And I'll talk about what we did in a bit. But before we get into all the more marketing and more of our stories, I put together a list of some things that I think artists should be thinking about when they start thinking about their next release or their show or something, whether it's in email or on social or ever, however they're messaging or talking about stuff, some things to think about and help you craft your messaging in a way that could potentially be a whole lot more interesting and engaging to those users besides just telling them information. Yeah, because I wrote at its core, marketing is about conveying a message to a specific group of people. And oftentimes we don't really even tailor it to a specific group of people. But first thing I wrote is there something more interesting you can say about what you're doing? And really that comes from just the idea of people saying like, new song out. I'm like, well, that's not very interesting. Just take a moment. Is there even just a more interesting way that you can say that little nugget right there, you know, and that you're just overlooking because you're just trying to get people to do what you want them to do instead of just taking a moment to say, is there something more interesting you can say? Are you being too broad and not specific enough? I think this is something I see happen a lot where people try to talk in the very, very big story and not like the specific of what is happening, especially on social media. I see this. Instagram is a good perfect example of what I mean by speaking too broad. They'll post an interesting photo and then they'll try and give 1,000 pieces of information or talk about the big story instead of really saying, here's why this moment that you are looking at is interesting and what's happening, like something more specific and more interesting and engaging than like, we're in the studio, new music coming. Like, no, tell me what's happening in that moment. What were you feeling? What were you thinking? What was going on that might be more interesting than just saying new music coming over and over again? Mm-hmm. Do you want me to keep going?
Yeah, go for it. I'm having lots of thoughts, but I think we can address them when we talk more about our own campaigns, right?
Because I was going to get through these, you know, so the people that always complain that we talk too much can just get their get their free advice and move on, not listen to us talk about our lives. The other thing, is it clear what you want people to do? This is another thing that's just a common marketing mistake that oftentimes people just don't make it clear what they want someone to do with the information that's being presented. Do you want me to click on something? Do you want me to listen to something? Am I supposed to go buy something? Am I just supposed to enjoy the little piece of information? Like, it's supposed to be entertaining? What are you wanting people to get out of what you're asking them to do, or what do you want them to do? A lot of times it's not really thought out because, you know, it's like, well, I'm sending this email and hoping that they'll go listen to the new song. Like, well, why are you putting 1,000 different links to everything else all around that? Just focus in on the one thing you want them to do. What are the hooks that you might be forgetting? Like some interesting little hooks. And I've got an example of this coming up. So when you're thinking about, yeah, you've got this song, but is there something funny that happened, or is it tied into a current event, or is there just some easy hooks that can go along with what you're talking about? Let's see. Are you speaking specifically to your audience? That's another one where a lot of times people speak very broadly, like they're talking to the whole world at once. And if it's email, that person is just sitting there at their computer or their phone reading the email by themselves. So you don't need to talk to them like they're a group. Or if you know your audience is a certain gender or age or whatever group you want to, if you know that they mostly fit in a certain group, speak to them knowing who they are, because that's more effective than, again, assuming that everyone is in your audience, because sometimes it's unclear who you're talking to.
Yeah, just weigh in real quick on that one. I think you know, there's a lot of emphasis on speaking to your fans like individuals and, you know, personalizing the email, not the signature, but the address and those, you know, all that stuff. I think most music fans are savvy enough to know you're not actually writing every social post and every email to an individual. So there's some lenience that they'll give you in speaking to a wider public than just an individual if the content relates to them and speaks to them, you know, as a specific group. So it's not necessarily that they need to be individuals all the time, but as long as you're speaking to their interests, then I think it's okay to acknowledge that they're, that you as an artist are speaking to many people at once.
Yes, I would agree. I would agree. And it's really just a matter of making sure that you know when those are appropriate, because sometimes it's confusing. Like I'll read an email and I'll be looking over my shoulder, like, is there a group of us standing here? I mean, who are you talking to? And understanding how different platforms, how that can come across. is there a series of reveals that can build interest? And by this, I mean, are you so excited to get all the, let the cat out of the bag that you just blow all the good marketing hooks at once because you just want everybody to know everything all at once, as opposed to, okay, here's this first nugget I'm going to put out there. And I've got a specific example of this from our release that I'll talk about in a minute. But like the idea is, can I make it more of like a serial release of information? Like, hey guys, I've got a new song coming up. And then next there's another little nugget that ties into it. And then another little nugget, and not just go, here's everything all at once in a detailed list that just gets overwhelming. And
patience and restraint are not, they don't come to easy to a lot of creative people, myself included. So
I know it's tough because it's like there's like this one thing you really want people to know, and it's just like hard to sit on that. And you're like, I just got to get that out there. And sometimes just a little restraint and a little creativity in how you release information or use what you've got coming up as reasons for people to take action. You can break things up. So don't be afraid to break things up. Just like a lot of times where, you know, people are now releasing a couple singles leading up to an album. With your marketing campaigns, you can take that same kind of concept. Going along with that, saying a very specific thing, you know, making sure that you're saying things that are specific and not just broadly. There's a company I follow on Instagram who will remain nameless, where I feel like this is something that, if I was to give them advice on what they're doing, it feels like every post they make is a photo of something happening. And I get a big, giant, broad kind of message or sales pitch as opposed to any sort of engagement about what's happening in the picture. And it just feels like a missed opportunity and like they're not really interested in connecting on the human level. I would say a couple more items here. Think about appealing to people's interests and fascinations. Like, people love shows about how things work, or even just thinking about like the shows that are popular. Like, half my team here at CD Baby has been watching the Great British Baking Show. So it's like, if your fans are all like binging a show, or there's something top of mind that's in pop culture or something like that, that you can make some sort of reference to or tie in what you're doing, that appeals to people's interest or something that they're fascinated with at the moment. And I think just oftentimes we don't appeal to the things that are going to interest folks, or like how there's commonality between those things. I think also I was thinking about, can you reverse engineer your thinking to get a better storyline? Where what I mean by that is, oftentimes we go like, I've got this song, I need to tell people about the song. Well, maybe go backwards. Okay, where'd the song come from? Okay, where was I at the place in my life? Where did this song come from? And then maybe start from that side of the story as opposed to just the end result, and find some more interesting angles by looking back. Where did this come from? Taking a moment to assess, what are some interesting things that were going on in my life that contributed to this song or this thing? And then start putting the pieces together of how that might work into a campaign.
Cool.
I've said a lot of stuff.
You left out the last one, which I think is one of the best tips you have.
Oh.
The closing the loop.
Oh, yeah. Can you leave people wanting more in a way that makes them have to close the loop, is what term I've seen people refer to it online, where BuzzFeed and some of those other sites are notorious for this in like the extreme way. But it's like making people feel like, oh, if I don't click, I'm not going to find out what happens. Like BuzzFeed, it's always like, 7 images that will blow your mind. Number 6, you won't even believe, you know, that kind of thing. You're like, okay, you got me. What is this? You know? But the idea that people needing to close the loop, and I think that's what happened with the campaign that we did, where I said, hear the song that got us kicked off the stage.
Yeah, brilliant one.
It was like, well, what did these guys do? Now I got to hear this, because what on earth could these guys have done to get thrown off the stage? And so that campaign really worked, because people had to close that loop. They had to figure out what it was, or hear what it was, that caused this incident. So
yeah, I mean, people should think about the term wait for it. You know, when you see your friends share a video and they say, wait for it, it's like, you got to watch it to see what they're talking about. So if you can basically think, wait for it, but then be more descriptive, and, you know, a little more specific in what you're creating a mystery around. That's opening the loop that then in the imagination of your potential fan, they need to close themselves by actually doing the thing.
So that was a big list of some tips and things to think about when you're releasing a song or you've got a marketing campaign, you're trying to figure out how do I get people to take action and care about my music, and just sort of some things to assess what you're doing and how you can make it better.
Yeah. So I just had a brief story to tell, which just occurred to me as you're reading that list. So I got an email a couple days ago from a Portland, Oregon based folk songwriter named Anna Tivel. She's amazing. She's a great lyricist. And I opened the email thinking I would know what would be inside, because she just got Rolling Stone covered her appearance at Americana Fest. She just won the Sammy Kahn Lyrics Award. She's got a lot of like super high profile attention going on right now. So I thought this would be a sharing that exciting news. But instead, it was a poem about her neighbor who had recently passed away, some words about mortality, and then kind of a call to see her fans in the real world, in some tour dates. And I was like, oh, what an interesting, I don't really have a conclusion from this. I'm sort of thinking out loud, but I thought, how interesting, because the people who love her already know she's brilliant. So we don't really, we're happy for her, I guess, that she's got this major attention going on. And so, yes, I think she should share that stuff in an email, and maybe she avoids it out of some humility thing. But I thought more, okay, that was a conscious decision to go and focus on the two things that are most important. One is telling a story with which everyone can relate about loss and someone who was important to her, and then leading that into kind of the call to action to be like, hey, I want to see you in the real world. Let's sort of celebrate this connection we have. Come to my show. And ultimately, someone buying a ticket for her tour is more important than them knowing that she was won an award or got a review in Rolling Stone or whatever, because that's about her. But what she put in her email was about me or about us as her listeners and that the community. I thought that was really an interesting thing. Not to side rail the conversation, but...
I think that's a perfect example of you could have received an email saying, hey, I'm in Rolling Stone, I'm in this, I'm in that, I'm that. Go buy my tour, you know, going to be out on tour. But instead, she took it from a more personal level and why it's important to her about going out on tour.
Yeah. And I don't know if it was a conscious marketing decision. I actually think she's just more of a sort of genuine person who's reticent about bragging too much and stuff like that. So it might just be her natural inclination to make that the content of her emails. But all the same, I think it's exactly what makes her career interesting to follow.
Well, good marketing doesn't have to be a conscious marketing decision.
Right.
Just telling a good story is good marketing. And if you're a good storyteller and think in the way of telling stories as opposed to selling stuff, typically there will be some good marketing decisions made maybe by accident.
Yeah. Happy accidents.
Happy accidents. Well, my example that I was going to give that from, you know, how I went and put together a campaign and just some of the decisions I made was about the release of this song that we just had. And I already said that, you know, I wasn't like, this song is going to change the world. Again, it's a good song. You should go listen to it. It's called Try by Small Town Poets. Those of you who have been putting in your 1,000 streams towards Chris and I, this is something else you can go put into that mix.
In case you're getting sick of the existing Small Town Poets catalog.
Yeah, yeah. I did meet people at the conference who said that, hey, I've been working on those 1,000 streams for you and Chris.
I've been working on it. I'm 3 down, 997 to go.
And also, really, I think part of the challenge is that we're not touring. We don't have a lot of performance opportunities going throughout the year. And we're not in the same city. So it's even hard for us to just get together to create some supplemental content. So really looking at this going, all right, it's a song. We do have more that we're working on that will roll out, but this might be it for a while, might not. Who knows? So first off, in the recording process, I thought, let's get more out of this and give our listeners something more to chew on with this song. And let's do some alternate versions. I know this has become popular in the streaming world because you might be able to find various playlists for it. So we had the original, you know, the official mix of the song. And then we did an acoustic version, a dream pop version, and then a rock version. All of the same song, but they're very different sounding. And so I thought, okay, that there alone, it adds some interest to this single release. So did the pre-save, set up the pre-save like normal and thought, okay, I don't want to give away that we're doing these alternate mixes just yet, because I want to focus on with the fans, getting them excited. Here's a song, go pre-save it. You can get instant access to listen to it. And that's why I like the pre-save at show.co, because you can incentivize your fans with something. Most of the pre-saves out there, it's just your fan pushes a button and big deal. Who cares? It's going to be available on release day anyway. So why do I care about pushing a button for no reason? Where this, they get rewarded for their action by whatever you want. You can give them audio. You can send them to a special website. You can enter them in a contest, whatever you want to do. But anyway, so they got instant access. And so a lot of our fans were doing that. They were getting excited. And so when I was talking about, you know, holding back a reveal, I wanted to make sure that on release day, the surprise for the diehard fans was that there was actually four tracks and not just one, and that there was all these alternate versions and they could go in and explore. And it was like a talking point. And so holding that back till release day, and then just trying to think about how can I even just frame that even in a more interesting way. Here's four songs, different versions. I thought, it's really like a Small Town Poets Choose Your Own Adventure. And so then I decided, well, I'm going to frame it around which version of the song are you? Are you original try? Are you acoustic try? Are you dream pop? Are you the rock try? And so really made it a reason for fans to go dive in and then report back to us and make it kind of fun as people compared to the various things.
I don't know if you were monitoring your email responses, but I answered which version I was.
I saw that. You said acoustic.
I was. I mean, not in all cases, but for that song, I like the acoustic one.
Actually, you know what? I think I'm there with you.
It was very, it seems sort of most closely tied to the actual nature of like the chords and the melody.
I like the vocals in the acoustic version. The harmonies feel more organic, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I thought with the idea, and I didn't really dive into this much with the marketing, but the reason why I liked the different versions of it is that it really highlights your song and can become an interesting commentary just on quality of a good song and how it can morph in different genres and formats. But anyway, part of also the reason for doing the different versions was to, like the acoustic one, to have something that we could pitch to like acoustic playlists. And for us, the acoustic version is very authentic to what we do, because people that know us know that we do a lot of acoustic sets and acoustic versions of our songs live throughout the day in a city we're playing at different locations, at, you know, at a radio station or an organization or at a college. We do that. And, you know, I still have the scars from Walmart. Yes, I still carry those with me. But so that was like an authentic version for us to do. And the other ones were just fun. The other thing that we did along with it was that, I almost forgot this, and this is one of those things about making sure that you don't forget some interesting things about the song itself, is that the song came from a dream that our keyboard player had, Danny. Where Danny was sitting at a table at like some karaoke bar, and Mick Jagger went up to sing a song. And the song he sang was the lyrics and melody to the song we wrote. So really, by way of dream, Mick Jagger wrote part of our song. So,
well, not even Mick Jagger. Whoever wrote the song Mick Jagger was doing karaoke for.
That's true.
You've got like several layers of
the royalties for this are going to be impossible.
Royalty splits. Yeah.
So what we did, that's an interesting story about the song. And then the other interesting piece about what we did is that this song came from a writing session we did at my house in the Northwest last year. It was dark and rainy October, and we were all just in my basement for a couple days just writing songs. And so we wrote what basically was a press release, but really it was an article. The article we wanted people to write. And that's the other thing. It's like when you're putting this stuff together, write the article that you want people to write and then call it a press release. Don't write some formatted press release like you're talking to some, you know, press like they would have you do back in the day, because that's just not what happens most of the time. So we created this press release and with that story of the song and sent it out, and every major website in our genre basically copied and pasted that press release as an article announcing our song. So it was just really, you know, for not having a whole lot going on, it was just a couple of ways of just thinking, instead of just going, we got a song, here you go, or we did four versions, here you go, just trying to think about little hooks along the way to make it more interesting. And the four versions was something that the press honed in on as well and thought was interesting. And so I don't know, that was my little experience recently of just trying to take something that I wasn't feeling very inspired about, as far as like, we have a song, but we don't have shows right now. We're not together to do something special around this song or live stream or anything like that. So how can I create anything that gets movement on this? And it actually is done quite well this first week out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even the thing about the multiple versions, like, I thought that was a lot of fun to just listen to them all and then like get to have an opinion, you know, like even that's like, you're not that you're going to change anything about your music based on the people that are writing you back weighing in, but like, I don't know. I thought that was cool. I was like, ooh, let me be the judge of this. I'll tell them which one's the best one, and I'm right. Of course I am. So I think it's fun to give your fans that challenge in a way.
Yeah, and also for us, our fans that liked us from back in the day of our label days are probably in their 40s, the same age as I am. And so it was interesting to see like what different people would grab onto. Also, the reason I was pushing for us to do the four versions of the same song is because we're sort of, the new music that we're working on is to me, it doesn't feel like a huge leap, but people that like our first album from 1997 are going to think, wow, this is very different. And so we wanted four versions to really just start introducing the idea that we're going to do some different things sonically coming up and be prepared. And this is your glimpse into it. And it was also our little way of understanding how people would react to it.
Totally. I think with my the campaign that I'm in the midst of, and took me a long time, many hours to build and conceptualize, came about from a similar feeling of lack of inspiration, or however you put it in your case, because it's an album I'm putting out that's really old. Like, it's brand new to the world, but I started recording it like 9 years ago. And put it, you know how I am, put things away. This one I put away because of some pretty dramatic personal changes in my life and you know, sort of the breaking up of the band that made the record and all this stuff that was a lot of it my own fault and this sort of things that like you'd be ashamed to really disclose in some grand press release, right? So first of all, hey, world, you should get really excited about this thing that's 10 years old. Next, let's talk about all the problems for why I didn't release it until recently. Like, it's all this stuff that's like you just wouldn't talk about. Well, I mean, I guess if you're Fleetwood Mac, maybe you do. But in my case, I didn't want to make a big deal about other people's, personal laundry and my own laundry. I didn't want to make a big public show of that. So I felt a little restricted in how I could share this. And yet I was, while I'm not necessarily like excited about the music in the way I would be about something brand new, I still really believe in it and I think it's good and I want to share it as a collection. So I felt both compelled to get it out, and yet all the normal ways in which I thought I could talk about it were feeling very private. And so out of kind of necessity, I thought, oh, the way I can release this is by forgetting about PR and blog coverage and any of that stuff and make this truly about just something that people who care about me already can get in on. And I will tell five secrets over 5 days and kind of disclose some of the stuff that's that I didn't want to talk about in a very broad public sense. So I built this thing that's like, you know, five pages that are hidden on my website, and all of them have videos of me disclosing a secret about the album and then talking about one or two of the specific songs each day. And then it would have whatever other material I could bring to it, like lyrics and demos and music videos, whatever else, just bonus stuff. And then people could sort of join my email list and go through it over the course of 5 days. So it was a lot of work to create. And I also ran a music video on Facebook as an ad for quite a while, I think maybe like 4 or 5 weeks in advance of launching this kind of marketing campaign just to get some other people interested. And so that was kind of the build up. Then I launched the campaign, which took forever to build. And now I'm still in the midst of it, and I haven't quite gotten my CDs back yet to make the offer of like, hey, you went through this thing with me, like you want to buy the CD now? Like, because I haven't gotten there yet, I have no idea if this is an effective use of my time. Was it a giant, not a money pit, but was it a waste of, you know, 40 hours or more of building a, you know, somewhat complicated funnel and tons of content? That was also the thing of like shooting videos, uploading, all the usual things. But like, just the amount of time it took, I'm like, exhausted from it without the reward yet of knowing if anyone who gets to the end of this 5-day thing even gives a damn to buy the CD or, so yeah, I'm feeling depleted and unsure, but I mean, I've gotten people writing me and then they've enjoyed it and stuff. So I'm hoping that when I give them the offer, they'll buy it.
Yeah.
That was a long-winded explanation of what I've been doing, but,
no, I've been following along. I've been getting the emails. And
that's where you stop.
I clicked through. Whether or not you feel like it's successful, the important thing is that you tried to do something and frame it in a way that would take something like, you could have just thrown out that old album, said, here, here's this album. But you tried to take it and do something with it to make it have more meaning and to get people to care. And sometimes those things work really well. Sometimes they don't, but that's just marketing. I mean, that's why you go, that worked. I'll do it again.
Yeah.
I mean, because it could, you're not sure what the payoff's going to be because you're not to the end yet. So it could be a big payoff and you were like, oh my gosh, I thought this wasn't going to work. And it ended up being amazing.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I should give my little call to action right now. If anyone wants to figure out what the details are or some of the details behind all these shameful secrets, you can go to go.chrisrobley.com. But it's been strange because, like you said, I haven't gotten to the potential reward at the end of it. So now I'm still sitting in the depleted, exhausted phase from having built and launched it. And then also that vulnerable feeling you have when you're, or at least when you feel like confessing things. And putting yourself kind of on the line. At least that's how I felt about it. So there's been like no joyous reward yet, but I did feel, as uncomfortable as all that makes me, I felt like this album deserved attention, even if it didn't get, you know, the kind of enthusiasm or like creativity I'd put behind something that I just made like a month ago and I'm feeling fully connected to artistically. But I just didn't want to abandon this record in that way. And I was like, you know, it's time to put this out and I'll do it up. I mean, it took effort. I'm glad I did it. Although, you know, we'll see how it goes.
It's also an important reminder that it doesn't matter how old music is. It needs to get out there and there could be an audience for it. It's very obvious. It's not just something that I felt and that I know that you felt working with all the artists we do at CD Baby. It's very obvious that us as artists, we always feel connected to the most recent thing and oftentimes feel like, oh, that old stuff. I'm over it. But that doesn't mean it doesn't have an audience. That doesn't mean it's not good. As artists, we're always kind of moving forward and what are we experiencing and feeling now? But that doesn't mean that you can't create an interesting campaign around something that's old. It doesn't have to be, this is the latest and greatest brand new thing from me. It could be something that has been there for a while. And actually, the way you described it, I think it's very intriguing. Like there's this album, this secret album with all of Chris's secret little secrets on little secrets on it. What did he do? I got to go listen.
Well, you know, now that I've promised that, I don't get it too far into the stuff that's about other people. Cause I, like I say in the videos, it's not entirely my story to tell. So, but I try to at least address the emotions around it and stuff. And, yeah. And I guess another hope I have is that even I'm completely aware that what I've built is probably overkill for 75% of the people who listen to my music. They'll go and even on the first day, they'll be like, whoa, there's like 5 videos, all this text, like all these pictures. This, like, I thought this was going to take me 3 minutes and this is too much.
Trump, and so hey, that's, Chris, Trump doesn't even make me do that much work to find out his secrets.
In fact, he repeats them in the Ukraine, in China, in Australia, just to make sure you know. So I also am totally aware that a lot of what I made will, what's the word, just sort of wash over most people. But I think there's a twofold benefit to still having done it. One is that I know that there's people who are going through it all and are telling me that they love it. So for those who really want to dig in, I've given them plenty to dig into. And two, for the people who don't really care to dig in, I hope that there's at least some measure of like, oh, he cared and he built this thing for me. I'm not going to do it, but that's pretty, you know, whatever. I don't know what the word is. Generous. I don't know if it's generous because it's my music and I want them to buy my album at the end of it. But you know what I mean? It's like, I've tried to go a little bit over the top and not just say, hey, new music, buy my crap. Like, I want to give you way more than that.
Yeah.
Even if it's not entirely experienced.
Yeah. I think that was felt. I felt that way. And I think also part of it's just for you. For you, it sounds like part of it is just closure on this thing. And I want to make sure it doesn't just slide out there. I want to make it known. And you've done that. And now that piece,
that's a great way to put it. Yeah, closure. It's like a clearing of the decks, but I don't want to clear them in a way that makes it seem like I'm discarding the music.
Yeah, you didn't just slip it out there. You've said you wanted to acknowledge it, and part of it's for you. And that's acceptable.
And now we've made a significant section of this podcast about me. Psychology lessons. Music psychology.
Fully unlicensed and zero, zero training, but I'm here for you, Chris. I don't want to speak for you, but I would say in both our cases, we experienced that just releasing music feels good and getting music out there. The thing that's exciting to me is that it's very clear that these platforms are indeed getting better at rewarding artists for releasing more music. That was something that I'm seeing this week with our new song being out, and just things like Release Radar is pushing it to all our fans, and we got added to a New Music Friday playlist, and all those things that helping reach more audiences. And the idea of the more we release, now you don't want to take it overboard, but the more we release and the more we communicate with our fans and the more we keep telling them a story, the more they're along for the ride. As opposed to a giant thing where we come and then disappear. I was talking about how it felt like our fans had transitioned more to streaming with this song compared to the last full-length album we did, which was in May of 2018. We almost got as much first-week streams for this one song and excitement from our fans as we did for that entire album that we did in 2018, which it was just odd to me. I'm like, wow, it really does make sense to do some singles because the excitement that we got and, you know, it was just that people wanted us to keep telling our musical story and know that we're still there, you know, just for some of our fans. And then it's just an opportunity to reach new people.
Well, and we've said this before, but when you had those list of questions earlier about getting specific and going small or you know, making one request of someone, a single gives us so many cool creative opportunities to do that. Like you can talk about just that song. You don't have to think about the whole collection. You get to make lots of different cover art things, which are cool. You know, like that's for me, like the little, just being in your little like maker's woodshop up and going on Canva or Photoshop or whatever, making another single cover, like it's just fun. Like, so I like that they can be less
cumbersome.
Cumbersome. Yes, exactly. And then out of that comes more marketing ideas.
Yeah. When you have like a collection, an album, it is harder to isolate certain songs for sake of a story. You can, clearly you can, but it sometimes feels like you're highlighting one song too much and it makes it sound like the other songs aren't any good or that this is really the ones you should focus on. Or the one that has the most interesting story may not be the song you want people to focus on. And so it can be a challenge to navigate, where with a single, all that stuff falls away. It's like, this is the one thing. You can enjoy this right now. Here's our interesting ways of describing it to you and releasing it to you.
Totally.
I still think, obviously, the album has merit. It's just we're not chained to that anymore.
Yeah. Well, as I am about to put out an album, I'm still a fan of the album format, although I am also releasing singles from it in the lead up.
When is that coming out?
Well, so I got a single coming out October 11th, and then another one coming about a week and a half after that. And then by the end of the month, the record in its entirety will be on all the places.
Even in China.
Even in China. And I assume all, 700 million people who are on streaming platforms will be listening to it.
Exactly. On day one. Because they're going to...
Because if they could only hear it, I just know they're going to love it.
Everyone who's listening to this podcast has probably said that.
Yes.
All right. If you have any sort of marketing advice or interesting thing that you did, whether it be small or big, and by small, I mean, it doesn't have to be this massive campaign you rolled out. It could be, hey, I tried this in an email and it worked. And it seemed like instead of doing the normal, usual, just, hey, go here and get our merch, I tried this and it worked. If you've got anything like that to share, or a big campaign that, like what Chris is doing, where it's a big elaborate campaign, and you want to share with the podcast, we'd love to hear it. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209 or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And we've got an email. Just have one today. It's from Maddie. And here we go. Hey guys, love the podcast. It's been really helping me elevate my music game and make more educated choices about my career. You recently did a podcast called How to Find a Producer That Won't Drive You Mad, and it was really helpful for when you're funding your own music. But I often find, especially in the area that I live, that there are a lot of producers that ask to work with me for free and pay for my studio time for a percentage of my royalties instead of getting paid. As a recent college graduate, I don't have the money to fund my albums alone. Is this a good option, or will it bite me in the butt later if these songs get popular? This is how I was able to put out my first songs on Spotify, but I realized after listening to your podcast that I never got the stems, and I do not have much control over my music because I split it three ways with the producer and sound engineer. Am I better off dipping into my savings and self-funding slowly, or is it better to be able to release more music that I'm creating regularly? I'm also using Real Studios, and the sound engineer I worked with is top tier, and I wouldn't be able to afford him on my own. Friends have asked if they could invest, but that makes me uncomfortable because I don't know what that really entails. As a young female musician, I feel like there are a lot of people who try to convince me that they could expand my career if I just worked with them. And I always feel like the rug is going to be pulled from under my feet. Would love to hear your input. Thank you. Best, Maddie. It's a good question. Lots to talk about there.
Yeah. And I guess a good problem to have too, if lots of people want to work with her.
And I don't know, because she called out being a female musician in that statement, if she was saying that she feels like skeptical about what they're saying or ulterior motives. I'm not sure what she was insinuating with how she phrased it.
Yeah, I did think of that. But one other thing I was thinking, if they are top tier talented people that are willing to work for free up front out of some, you know, other agreement, whether or not those agreements are fair, it at least suggests that they think there's success potential there. And they're willing to put in the work for some later reward. Now, what the terms of those agreements are is a whole other matter, but it sounds like she's in a good situation, at least in terms of where her talent is at.
Yeah. Well, I did respond to her by email for some of her questions, but told her we'd also talk about it on the podcast because I thought it was a good one. First off, you definitely want to make sure all of that arrangement is in writing. I say this, and I know that I've done things where I've like, I should have got that in writing. I tell everyone to get it in writing and I didn't even do it, but it's good to get in writing. And there's some things in here where I'm not exactly sure the level of the arrangement because I only know what she wrote in the email. So by that, I mean, Small Town Poets, one of the people, we kind of call him our sixth honorary member. He has a studio, and we would pay him some cash, and then some of the arrangement for one of the records was that we'd pay him some money on the back end as well for his production work. So that was pretty straightforward. There was no ownership. There was no hoarding of files. There was no misunderstanding of who owns what and who's controlling what. So I think that's a scenario where it's like, yeah, I could see that working. However, I do know of plenty of situations, and we've had them on the podcast, and I've talked to many artists, where a producer says they'll do something and give them a deal, but then it's really the producer sort of using it as a way to build almost like a catalog, like a record company.
Yeah, they want to be a label.
Yeah, but they don't make that clear to the artist, and they don't really make it clear who owns what, and that's where it becomes problematic. If you don't know going in, you should figure that out, because that's where I have a problem with it, because in this case with Maddie, she's saying that she doesn't quite control it. So to me, that's concerning. But then if it does become popular, that's where the ambiguity really hurts. The only case that I can think of off the top of my head where this was really pronounced was with Rebecca Black. Do you remember this?
I do. Yeah.
And that's the exact scenario that she found herself in with Friday. There was this producer guy in LA that was doing similar things. I think he was charging up front, but it was getting all these songwriters that they were all kids, basically, or teens, I should say, where the parents wanted to really, you know, pay to have them do something. And he was doing it cheaply, but secretly, it sounded like, I don't have the contracts, but we had to help clean up some of the mess. It seemed like claiming ownership, and they didn't quite understand what they were getting into. And so when things blew up, suddenly they're there going, hey, this is actually mine. And you signed this thing, or we agreed to this thing. And so that's what you got to be careful of.
Yeah. All that being said, if the terms are agreed up front, I actually, maybe this is me just missing being in studios a lot, but I'm like, that sounds pretty sweet. Like, if you don't have a lot of money or any money now to invest in making recordings, but you have top tier people that, you know, are going to work for the promise of some future reward, like, that sounds awesome to me. I'd be in studios all the time with engineers and producers who want to work for free. And then, you know, again, as long as it's not the situation you're describing where later they reap all the benefit and you don't have any control, that'd be crazy.
But yeah, I wouldn't
it's
say
more of a fair split between the three or two of you or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the other distinction is that the split between the sound recording, or what's the deal with publishing too? I mean, you got to iron all that out.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with doing it. I just would want to make sure that it's clear and in writing. And the idea of things being in writing doesn't have to be a contentious thing or this weird thing. Really, it could be presented as, hey, let's document this. So 5 years from now, if something happens and we're going, I've done 1,000 recording sessions since then, I can't remember the exact details of what we said 5 years ago. Let's just document this. It could just be bullet points and we both sign it, and at least we have some sort of documentation of what we agreed upon.
Yeah, particularly when what you're documenting is the thing that they're banking will happen and the whole reason why they're giving up their time now.
Yeah, they're not doing it because they're bored and there's nothing on Netflix. So yeah, that's one thing you got to understand. And that may be why the stems weren't handed over, or maybe you just need to ask. But, you know, I know situations where people clearly were hiring an engineer just to record something and, you know, there wasn't any sort of free time or anything like that. And still sometimes the engineer feeling protective of those stems, even though they're not his.
Yeah.
Did we answer all of her questions?
Oh, well, I guess would it be better for her to just dip into her savings and pay for these things outright and avoid any of this? But my answer to that is not necessarily. Just be cautious and get things in writing.
And she mentioned the idea of having friends fund it. I think that is also something that, tread lightly, there's a lot of people that have misconceptions about the earning opportunity in the music industry. And we'll see an artist with talent and go, oh, I've got 20 grand. I've watched The Voice. I know that someone like you could make $100,000 easy, and it's super easy, and I'll pay for your album and I'll get paid back, no problem, and not understand the realities of the music business. So that's just my big thing. If somebody is offering you money, you know, a friend or a family member, and they're like, I just want to see you have opportunity to advance your career, here's the money. If there is payment terms, make sure you get that written down. And if it's just something that it's like they want to help you out, then, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. As long as everyone has the same expectations.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else?
To go back to our marketing conversation, one of your points was about focusing on the one thing you're going to ask. And I found with email, a good way to force myself to do that is to actually use in MailChimp the big button. You know, they have the button feature you can drag into your content.
You mean just like the button, like the section where it drops a button in there?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the actual little button. So I just drag the button in first, and then I say, what's that button going to say? And then I write the email, and hopefully it's, you know, only a few sentences and gets them to the one thing they ask, although I can get long-winded. But I like to start with the button, even if I have no idea what, you know, what the contents of the email is, because then I'm like, everything must build to this one thing.
If you had said that like an hour and 15 minutes ago, this podcast could have been 5 minutes long.
Oh, well, that's why I like to talk. That's just, why just I didn't say
with,
it.
Just start with the button.
Start with the button.
I think that goes into what I was trying to say when I was talking about reverse engineering what you're wanting, like the story, because oftentimes people will start talking or writing and not understanding what they want people to do. Or, well, maybe that's not what I was saying, but I like that idea because it forces you to start with what's the action, and then let me make that action interesting and not just talk about something and then tell people to do some random thing.
Right. And then you avoid that thing where you have like 15 different links and you're talking about everything that's ever happened in your last like 2 months of making music. It's like, nope, there's one thing. What's this particular email going to be about?
So when I talk about this episode, I'll say, great marketing advice, but you won't believe what Chris says all the way at an hour and 20 minute mark.
Yes. It's perfect. You've opened the loop. Now we're closing it.
Yeah.
So thank you for listening this long.
Yes.
Loop closed. Bye-bye.
Start with the button. I'm going to use that, Chris.
Start with the button.
You've been holding out on me.
Yeah, I think the blog post just wrote itself.
Start with the button. The rest will follow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to say. I'm just without words.
Well, all right, good. I've coined a marketing phrase. Which only applies to MailChimp users.
It applies to anything. The button can be metaphorical, Chris.
That's true. That is true. And other websites and email systems have buttons as well. Okay, start with the button.
There we go. All right. Excellent. Well, again, if you'd like to weigh in on a topic or give us some marketing advice, you can do so at 360-524-2209 or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com and see if you can top Chris's start with the button, because I'm going to write that all over the marketing stuff in the marketing department.
Nice. See, I do things for CD Baby.
You do. You do.
I help.
You do help. All right. Well, I feel like we've come to the end.
Yeah. Well, everyone have a good life.
A good life. Be fulfilled. Write good music. Take time to take care of yourself.
Go for a jog. Smell the roses.
Yes. Go for a jog. That's a good one. Go for a jog. When we're talking about jogging, we really have come to the end of the podcast. Yeah. So that's going to do it for this episode, and we'll catch you next time. See ya.
See ya.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.